This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Podcast as we do the Western Conference playoff previews. Unfortunately, my co-host Adam Murray is still out. He's overseas. Now I'm starting to get a little worried. He's been out for a while now. But I've got a couple of guests here that are going to help me when we preview the Western Conference playoffs as we're finally into the playoffs. And I'm joined by one guy who's been on the show and the other who hasn't. They're both local yokels. I'll bring in the first guy who's been on the show before, and that is my buddy Norman Rockwell. How you doing?
Doing pretty well.
Oh, okay. So you're doing pretty well?
Yeah, I mean, not quite great, but not bad. So pretty well.
All right, how much have you changed and evolved as a basketball analyst since the last time you were on here? Because I think you did the Western Conference preview last time.
Yeah, I regressed.
You've regressed?
Yeah.
As a person or as an analyst?
As a person.
But not as an analyst.
That too.
But it's good to have you. And then I'm also joined by, this is the first time he's on this one, and this is Ryan Arena. How you doing, man?
Doing good. Glad to be on.
All right. And are you...
Is that better than pretty good?
Maybe?
Western Conference, here we go. Let's back to you, Andrew.
Well, no, I was just giving you the floor there. Ryan and Norman go way back, and then me and myself with Ryan and with Norman, not so much, but we've been knowing each other for quite a while. Norman, so you're a fan of nothing, so I'm not even going to bring it to you. But Ryan, you are not a fan of it. Come on, Norman is like, I don't know what to call him. He's like an NBA agnostic. He's not a fan of really.
Nihilist.
Yeah, he's not a fan of really one specific team. He's a fan of the team that nobody else wants to root for.
That's an ethos.
What does that mean?
It's a Big Lebowski fan.
I don't know what that is.
It's a movie about bowling.
You haven't seen The Big Lebowski?
No, that was Kingpin. Kingpin was the movie about bowling.
Oh, you're right.
I've seen Big Lebowski. I'm not a huge fan of it. You know, I think that's actually one of the Coen's worser movies.
Ooh, that's fighting words.
Oh, Ryan, you agree?
I agree that it's fighting words, yeah.
Why? Because it has Julianne Moore in the cut?
No, because it's a great movie. It's an amazing movie.
But she really ties it together.
You need to end this podcast and go watch it now.
I think Julianne Moore is like naked in every movie she's in, though, right?
Just about.
I mean, Boogie Nights. Trying to think of a couple other ones where. Okay. All right, so let's actually go ahead. Let's go ahead and talk about the Western Conference playoffs because we're just bored beyond belief now because it's fucking late at night and I'm tired. But I don't know. Is there, first of all, the regular season in general? I mean, there was a lot of different things that just took place in general. Kobe Bryant's last year, Golden State setting the record for 73 wins. Anthony Davis having a 65-point, 20-rebound game, probably the most efficient single performance in the history of the NBA. But what was
How the hell did that sneak in there?
It was. It was. Give me a more efficient game than that one, the one that Anthony Davis had against Detroit.
Steph Curry.
He was not as efficient as that day.
Pick a team. Pick an opponent.
Pick an opponent for Steph Curry?
Yeah.
Wasn't he really? Didn't Damian Lillard outplay him one time?
One out of 82 games, yes, he was outplayed by Damian Lillard.
You are so. I think we finally found a homer team for Norman Rockwell, but I'm holding out hope. So once we get to that topic, we'll see it. But Norm, what was your biggest takeaway with the regular season? Did you have one thing that, was the one thing that you just really remember? You know, like Scott Van Pelt does the one big thing. Was there one big thing for you?
Steph Curry was the MVP last year. Should be the most improved player this year, as well as the MVP. Best player ever.
Ever.
Best season ever.
Best player ever.
Yes.
Okay, now, are you doing your typical, like, internet meme hyperbole here?
No.
Okay, and you've looked at analytics, like, because you're an analytics guy, which I detest. But you really feel like, analytics-wise, Steph Curry's got it nailed down in terms of his efficiency.
I guess maybe some, like, Wilt Chamberlain seasons may be better, but in this kind of more modern era, no one's come close.
Even
no
LeBron in, like, the Cleveland years, even though they weren't as successful.
Never had a season this good. Although LeBron didn't have nearly the surrounding talent, but he never came close to 73 wins.
Ryan, was there one big thing that you remember about the season?
It's a broken record. It's going to be Curry. I mean, 403 threes, I think it was.
I thought you were going to say the unicorn.
You know?
Ryan Arena, I have to out him that Ryan Arena is a Knicks fan.
Don't be ashamed,
Ryan. Don't be ashamed. You have to open up to everybody when you confess.
Porzingis definitely Porzingis actually sticks out about this season as well. But also my searing hatred of Kurt Rambis and what he'll do to Porzingis if they keep him on.
But he's not going
to
stay as the coach, right?
Phil Jackson says that's his guy, and he's not interested in interviewing anyone else. So
how's that going?
That makes me a sad panda. It's a little worrisome. So,
Norm, you have any how's it going, Joey? Jokes.
I'm still mourning the process.
Now this is something that me. Okay, this is it. I got to go toe to toe with Ryan and Norman about this. Like, they thought that Sam Hinkie was a genius for tanking in Philadelphia. I thought it was a really, really stupid decision, and that I knew wasn't going to work. So I need a defense here. Why it was a smart decision?
Because they're in a way better position than they were 3 years ago.
But they're still losing, and they haven't been able to promote any kind of winning or improvement. Whereas in Minnesota, they tanked, but then they got better.
They're looking at perhaps having almost 6 lottery picks starting next two seasons for them.
But their talent evaluation has been, let's be honest, a little subpar. You know, they got Embiid, Saric.
Embiid's probably still the right pick in retrospect.
Coach Embiid.
Ryan.
Embiid drew up a nice play that time.
Okay. Who would you take, knowing what you know now, going forward, who would you take over Embiid at 3 in that draft?
Oh, you absolutely take Embiid. Are you mean knowing what we know now?
No, going forward, knowing what you know now, who do you take?
Oh, God. Embiid wouldn't get picked. Embiid wouldn't even be picked in the first round.
You wouldn't take Embiid?
Oh, he'd go in the first round. I mean,
yeah, because.
Wait, no, knowing what you know now, going forward, from today's date forward, who would you rather have? Who would you like to have over Embiid in that draft besides for Parker and Wiggins?
Okay, for the people that got ahead, well, we're going to have to look at the entire list because I would probably I would literally take Doug McDermott if I could.
All right, wait. Let's go through the guys picked after Embiid, okay? And y'all give me yay or nay.
Okay.
Aaron Gordon is the one guy maybe a little bit close.
Now Aaron Gordon almost won the dunk contest. He's amazing. He basically let's put it this to a vote. It was Aaron Gordon the reason that they shipped out Tobias Harris?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, was he the reason?
I mean,
I would think so. Yeah, they wanted to get him on the floor.
I was gonna go with Hennigan's an idiot.
Okay, so yeah, but well, the Magic got a little bit better, didn't they? Even after the Tobias trade, because I don't want to say the trade blew up in their face with Ersan Ilyasova and Brandon Jennings, but it does feel a little more one-sided now than it did about a month or so ago.
Wait, what? It was a bad trade then. It's a bad trade now.
Well, it looked a little even when it first happened, but now a month later, it does feel a little bit like Detroit kind of stole Tobias Harris.
I mean,
I'm trying to be nice here.
Maybe hindsight's 20/20, but I have a hard time thinking. Like, I thought it was kind of universally accepted as a pretty bad deal from Orlando's standpoint at the time.
Well, I don't know. They also got away from that contract because they had just sealed it, so they gave themselves a little bit of cap room. But then again,
it's Orlando Magic cap room, so it's not really the most valuable thing.
Well, everybody's going to have cap room too. Is the other
yeah, one. And who's going to Orlando to play with that team?
Okay, let's go ahead and talk about it because I'm done talking about Coach Embiid and I'm done talking about the process.
Okay, so next was Dante Exum. Would you take him over Embiid going forward?
Both of them have completely debilitating injuries that will ruin their entire careers.
This was a terrible draft.
The 2014 one actually had a decent amount of hype, but I don't know. It definitely fell flat.
Marcus Smart, Julius Randle, Nick Stauskas.
Oh, Marcus Noah Smart. Smart or Randle, I would have taken over.
No. I'm talking about now.
Now, yes, I would take Smart.
You would take Julius Randle now over Joel Embiid.
I would take a double-double guy in Julius Randle, yes.
I said Julius Randle.
Julius Randle. He averages a double-double.
Did he?
Yes. Right. He averaged 10 rebounds a game.
Kobe allowed him to average 10 points, though. That's the tough part.
Okay, let's talk about this with Kobe Bryant. What did you really...
Right, he did. Okay, my bad. He did. He averaged 11 and 10.
But then again, he might just play the first game of the season and break his leg, so you got to watch out there. What did you think of the Kobe's last game? Was it like vintage Kobe? So you chuck the ball. It didn't bother you at all.
No, I mean, if in a game where it's a complete exhibition and like it doesn't matter, like yeah, go out and have fun.
Yeah,
yeah, you love chaos.
Yeah, that was pretty cool to watch.
But you didn't like. But there wasn't something inefficient about it that made you think, oh, this is stupid. But he's just obviously just chucking for 40 or 50 points.
I mean.
He was, but
I'm yeah, like, but I'm fine with that.
So you're fine with bad basketball, just so that one guy can have like a farewell.
Well, what's the alternative? With
we
the
won.
Lakers?
The alternative is that
to a win.
The alternative is he could sit on the bench while everybody else plays, and then he can just say goodbye and leave because nobody likes him.
That doesn't get 3 million tweets, Andrew.
But I mean. Was that like the most inefficient 60-point game of all time? Like, or was it Damon Stoudemire against the Hornets? Well, that wasn't 60 though. That was like 53, right?
I don't follow Damon Stoudemire's career that closely.
Was anybody in the Hive that day when Damon Stoudemire scored 50 on us when he was with the Blazers that day?
No. They're
in the Charlotte Hive, maybe, right?
No, it was New Orleans. It was like
what
it was, I think it was.
Is this like the Dan Dickow team?
I mean, if you look at some of the 50-point performances, there's some really random ones. I think Corey Brewer had one, right?
Corey Brewer had one.
Tony Delk. Tony Delk got one. Okay, someone's slamming hard on him, so I know someone's about to look it up for me, so to correct
me. That was me. I'm looking right now.
We've got to find out the very random 50-point games.
I remember there was a game one time on NBA 2K. I put up 50 points with Charlie Ward to beat Norman. He kept leaving him open because he didn't believe that Charlie Ward could beat him.
Who did Charlie Ward play against?
It was playing as the Knicks. I want to say it might have been the Suns.
Yeah, I think it was the pre-D'Antoni Suns.
Terrell
Jamal Crawford had a 50-point game.
That was when he was with the Knicks, right? That was when he was with the Knicks.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And
Antoine Jamison had a couple.
He had back-to-back 50-point games. One was against Kobe and the Lakers, where Kobe got 51 and...
Wow, he did, actually. Yeah, he
got 53.
12-3-2000, 12-6-2000. My God.
Mm-hmm. Just a lot of random... Okay, we actually have to talk about the playoffs now.
Do we?
Yeah, well, is there anything... Let's really just take this as an overview and just kind of go from here. Is there really... Because I don't want to break it down too much right now, you know, until we get into the nitty-gritty, but are there really any matchups here in the Western Conference where... Because, to be honest, there's a pretty decent dip between the top four seeds and then 6 through 8, like, or 5 through 8. Do you see really any intrigue here in the West?
I think most of the intrigue is just watching how teams respond to specific matchups, what lineups they play, what do they do when the games really start to matter. Like, I mean, with like the Warriors are pretty much are a huge favorite, and there's no reason the Rockets should put up much of a contest, but it'll be interesting to see how often they go to the Draymond Green at center lineup.
That's the death lineup?
Yes.
Okay, describe the Death Star, the death lineup that Zach Lowe is punned. Well, where did it start? Was it Zach Lowe? Was it Rick Bucher?
I think it might have been Nate Duncan.
Oh, stop it with that promoting Nate Duncan podcast crap.
Well, no.
You've been feeding him to me for the last 2 months. Oh, it's really good. To listen to Nate Duncan. Nate Duncan has a podcast called Dunked On, which I think is on Podcast One and SoundCloud. So for the non-Place to Be Nation, or maybe the Place to Be Nation listeners, maybe you could check him out because Norman Rockwell says he's great.
Yes.
So the Death Star lineup. Describe it.
Steph, it's the best five players for Golden State playing all together, where they have Draymond Green at center, three wings in Klay Thompson, Harrison Barnes, Iguodala, and Steph Curry, and it's probably the best lineup in the NBA.
It's not probably the best lineup in the NBA.
I was going to say history, but
okay, that. Now we've gone ad nauseum with 96 Bulls. But here's the thing.
The funny thing is the 96 Bulls' best lineup is actually pretty similar. It's I'd say it's Ron Harper, MJ, Kukoc. Pippen, Rodman, and Kukoc, which is actually kind of a similar style of lineup.
Yeah, a little bigger, a lot of stretches, but they didn't take a lot of. I don't think they took a lot of threes back then.
Nobody did though.
That was the year though where they brought in the free throw, the 3-point line, by about half a foot. So there were there were some players
raining three.
Exactly. So Dennis Scott set the record for threes, and some guy got Dennis Scott had 10 threes in a game or something like that, and so but they weren't they were a good 3-point shooting team, but they didn't take a lot of threes.
Well, no, but the thing with that lineup is how it's similar to the Warriors is that it's a bunch of wings and undersized center who's long and active.
Yeah.
And that lineup is actually incredibly good defensively. It's not just that they're a running-gun shooting lineup.
And even with Kukoc, even if they're not taking a ton of threes, he's stretching the floor not just because he's taking threes, but you have to have a center that can stick Tony Kukoc, who's a perimeter player. And it was just rare that a team would have that if they didn't go small.
And the other thing with the Warriors too is, because they're all fast, quick, and long players, when they front the post and make it difficult to enter ball into big players, the guys on the backside are so quick at scrambling, they can cause a lot of pressure, get turnovers, and get out and run. And when they get in the open floor,
that's the impressive part. The 3-point percentage defense is really, really good. I don't know how they do it. I guess they just, like you said, they get them into a scramble mode, and teams just don't know how to react to the pace of play and being able to get easy shots and making the open shots.
Yeah, basically they've got a lot of length. They don't have a traditional big shot blocking rim protector.
They got Bogut.
Well, I was talking about that line specifically.
Just the specific line. Well, Draymond can get in there and snag one or two.
Yeah, Draymond's deceptively long. I think that's one thing that people overrate height, whereas standing reach or arm length is actually just as important. Rajon Rondo's a guy who's got incredibly long arms, who actually that's kind of one of the sole reasons why he was a decent defender at some point.
Yeah.
In his career. Not currently.
But then again, there are guys like Michael Carter-Williams who it don't do shit for him.
He's a good defender. He just can't shoot.
Michael Carter-Williams isn't good at anything.
Okay, well, he has the physical tools to be a good defender.
He's good at winning me bets, Andrew.
No, that was Michael Kidd-Gilchrist.
Oh, my bad. No, you're right. Michael Carter-Williams.
Yeah, but no, you're right. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist sucks ass, too, because he fucking lost a bet for me. Because me and Ryan bet that he was going to make less than $12 million on his next contract, and the motherfucker got $13 million.
Because one of the league's three best perimeter defenders gets paid.
He played in three fucking games since this happened.
Yeah, but he got paid for his previous 82.
I mean, I even got his numbers here. Hold on. He got 12.7, 6.4, 1.3 in seven games, $13 million. Obviously, well paid.
I was well paid. Really? Hey,
you're just walking off. That's all you're doing. You're just walking off because you know you won the bet. That's God damn it. All right, so we're talking about the Warriors and all these all time stuff, okay? And it's a little bit too much there, but there's a legitimate argument to be made of how great they are. What you got?
To give to give you an idea, though, if you look at, like, offensive and defensive ratings, like, as far as, like, lineups, the best ones in the NBA this year, you're looking at mostly, you know, teams that might, it might be, like, a net of, like, 18 or 19, might outscore a team by 18 or 19.
One of them is the Hawks with, like, Dennis Schroeder and Mike Scott.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like, if you like an offensive rating minus defensive rating, like, it's mostly, like, things like, you know, 18 or 19 points is, like, absurdly good. Mm-hmm. And the Curry, Green, Iguodala, Thompson, and Barnes lineup, it's 47. Like, it's a net rating of 47. That is, like, so sick.
Is that, like, Barry Bonds, like, cannot fit the baseball cap big head mode?
It's as close to being Bondsian as anything in basketball. That is, 47 is an ungodly number. Like, that means you're, like, scoring more than anybody, and nobody can score on you.
Yeah, like, basically that means if you're playing by, like, NBA 2K rules where you turn the fatigue off,
yeah,
and that lineup plays 48 minutes, they would win their average game by 47 points.
So, like, this was...
They would win 142 to 95. That is exactly what they would do.
Like, if you played the actual Warriors on 2K, they would probably do worse than the real Warriors do?
I haven't played 2K, so I have to imagine that...
I read somewhere that the 2K software guys had to redo it because of how well Steph Curry was playing, because his rating just... They literally could not computerize how high his rating was, so they had to redo the whole thing, the whole scale.
I had a season on 2K where I sent Steph Curry to shooting camp, and that made him kind of similar to this. he didn't miss shots after that, so you know that was kind of neat.
So the Houston Rockets, that's their first round opponent. They played each other in the Western Sacrifice. Conference Finals. What's that?
The sacrifice.
The Golden State Warriors in action.
Yeah, the jobber.
So you're saying that there is no chance here? Like, no chance. I mean, James Harden, do you think he might just start playing defense again like he did last season?
Unless he can stop all five people. No.
They've got the secret weapon in Michael Beasley.
Who's probably going to
play? They do have Michael Beasley. When did they sign him?
They got him out of China when he was done with his team there, like, in March? I think it was March.
The sad thing is he's going to play decent minutes this series.
Well, he's averaging 13 points and 5 rebounds a game.
Yeah.
Still better than Michael Kidd-Gilchrist.
What happened to Houston? I think that's actually more so than, you know, whether they can, like, put, you know, more so than whether they can beat Golden State, which we know they can't. It's more of a question of, you know, can they steal a game? What happened to them this season?
You know, J.B. Bickerstaff called them a broken team. I just think it's simply that Harden got lazy early in the season. He wasn't ready to play. Offensively, he was taking shortcuts. Defensively, he just stopped trying completely. Whereas last year, I felt like he really was trying on defense, unless somebody wants to object to it. But and then Dwight Howard physically is just – he's really taking a step back. Really.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand how a team with Harden and Howard can be a 500 team.
You know, Trevor Ariza's numbers are almost the same. Like, he was almost at 2 steals. Patrick Beverley was really good. Even though the Ty Lawson experiment blew up in their face.
Yeah, they stole Beverly. I mean, they even got to bring back Josh Smith. Although, you know.
They had a huge problem at the four all year where...
T. Jones.
Jones, Monty Unis' injury. They've been, like, just running through, like, Montrezl Harrell at some point. Like, they were... Clint Capella. It's been a complete revolving cast.
Did Montrezl Harrell, like, shove a referee in the D-League?
Sounds like something he might do.
It sounds like... You know Montrezl Harrell very well.
I've seen him play.
No, the only highlight I saw Josh Smith was Andrew Gatalog bouncing it off of his ass because he got poked in the eye. So when he was trying to inbound, when Gatalog was trying to inbound the ball, Josh Smith wasn't looking up, so he just bounced it off of his ass, and so he could keep the dribble alive when he inbounded it. That's the only thing I remember about Josh Smith as a Houston Rocket this year.
Josh Smith. I'm looking at the Rockets team stats. Josh Smith shot 34% for the Rockets this year.
And he was in the playoffs, he was incredible. Do you think, you know, Smith does have this tendency to kind of turn it on and off. Do you think he can do it in the playoffs, though? I mean, this is really what it's going to have to take for the Warriors. Like, they would have to, all of them would have to just turn it on all of a sudden.
I don't know if he's going to get the chance to. I mean, as bad as he's played, I don't know if Bickerstaff will put him out there. Has he been getting, like, consistent minutes lately?
At 7...
It doesn't look like it.
It doesn't seem like it to me. It looks like Capella gets more of the minutes there.
Yeah. But they can't play Clint Capella and Dwight Howard together like they've been doing
Series. Well, they did in the playoffs last year, though, right? They played a lot of Capella and Howard together.
Yeah, but not against the Warriors.
Well, you know, Harden made Thompson eat his lunch in the playoffs last year.
Well, that is one interesting thing about this series that you could watch is just how well does Thompson defend Harden. He had trouble last year, and Thompson's prone to getting in foul troubles and kind of reach and bite on fakes, and Harden should give him trouble with that, as he did last year, but not so much for this series, but going forward to a series against San Antonio, if you can see defensive growth in Klay Thompson, it'll speak well to how he'll defend someone like Ginobili, who's kind of got that awkward left-handed style of drawing fouls. Mm-hmm. So like that could be like a little sub thing to watch for in the series is how well does Klay defend Harden.
Okay.
For what it's worth, Harden's played real, like, I mean, he's had an off, you know, kind of had not been up and down this season. But,
yeah, but he had five games where he had like 40 points and double digits.
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, this, the last six games where they really needed to just like surge to get in, he's been shooting extremely well and scoring at a really high clip. So I think it looks like 38 points, 34 points, 40 points, 30 points, 26, and 41 in the past six. So
I'd actually be curious to see what Harden's on-off splits are this series. Just I'm assuming the Warriors are going to – I mean, Houston's offense is going to die when Harden sits on the bench.
That was the surprising thing for Houston in the playoffs last year when they made the comeback against the Clippers. And in that Warriors series is that when Harden would sit, their offense was still able to kind of stay afloat a little bit.
I can't see that happening this year. I'd be really curious to see how, if he posts a positive plus minus stat, or if it's close to being positive, and that might be a sign of like of kind of like maybe a weakness in the Warriors. If Harden can remain positive,
they got the three ball though. You know, they were second in three-pointers made. Obviously, the Warriors are first.
Yeah, more.
Like, if you look at the three-pointers made, it's ridiculous. Like, I think the Warriors are, like, a good two made threes ahead of the next guy, and that's the Houston Rockets. Mm-hmm. But the three-point percentage is 22nd, which is just really bad. But here's, you know, I asked you this before, and I'm going to ask you again. Do we see 53-point attempts by a single team in a playoff game? We got to get to 50.
You might see it.
Okay, because didn't the Hawks in Game 7 in 2014 against the Pacers, didn't they like have like 40 three-point attempts?
They probably had a ton against Indiana because the whole game plan.
They got super desperate because Horford was out with the season, yeah.
Well, it wasn't so much they got desperate. They were playing five guys who actually could shoot. I think like or at least five guys who had the reputation they could shoot, because Pero Antich was not really a good three-point shooter but kind of like took a lot of them.
You said that whole thing just so you could say Pero Antich.
Well, actually, no. I was kind of one of the series I was kind of interested in because I remember the Pacers style of defense with Hibbert was to kind of have him like where it was icing pick and rolls, sagging back, protecting the paint, and it was interesting to see a five out team go against that style and really expose Hibbert as a guy who couldn't get out and pick and pop players.
Yeah, a guy that had, I believe. Yeah, I'm looking at the numbers right now. Warriors 13 three-pointers made and off of 31 attempts, and then the same number of attempts, the Rockets had 10.6, which was tied, shockingly, with the Charlotte Hornets, which I just can't believe. But I just don't know. Ryan, you see 50 three-point attempts in a game by the Rockets.
What was their high this year? I mean, have they
– Well, I got to think they had like at least 40 in some of these games that they've had this year.
I don't think so, because I think for one thing, Golden State actually, you know, they take a lot of threes and they respect the three. They don't want to give up many themselves, and Houston, I don't think is going to play anybody else in the postseason. So
actually, let's say
they fall way short.
That's actually one thing I'm really interested to see with Houston, because I think Morty and company are going to be more than willing to try things in a really desperate situation.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious to see what they do. Last year they kind of tried to play fast against the Warriors in the playoffs.
And then James Harden turned the ball over like 25 times in the elimination game. Yeah.
Yes. But like based on the early success in the finals, Cleveland had playing this like slow down, like bully
big,
ball.
Big on big. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see if Houston tries to replicate that at some point. And just really like crashing off the offensive glass incredibly hard, not allow the Warriors to get out and run. Like I'm really happy Houston is a team here because I think they're one of the teams that are more willing to try very different things from game to game.
So
it will be fun to see like what a desperate Houston team tries to do.
Likelihood Dwight Howard commits a flagrant foul.
In game one or
any of the games in the series.
Oh, 100%.
100%.
He's going to be playing against in general proximity of Bogut and Draymond Green. It's
okay, now you say that in a way which like Bogut and Green are like agitators or just that they get under people's skin because
Green's an agitator. Bogut is dirty.
Bogut's a dirty player.
But Bogut is also an agitator as well.
Well,
so he's a dirty agitator.
Bogut's dirty, but then Bogut will like try to get in your head too.
Well, it's the difference between like Draymond Green will like hit a dunk and like pose and flex and like get in your face and talk trash. Bogut will just like when no one's looking, just like sucker punch you in the gut. like that's actually one thing to watch this series is like whenever you get a rebound by Bogut and an outlet pass, just watch Bogut throwing elbows or like he'll reach out and grab opposing defenders so they can't get back on defense.
I've seen that. I've seen him do that.
It's a fun thing to watch, especially when he gets a small.
Yeah.
He gets a smaller play who's not accustomed to that.
He's also good at pointing his finger out when Steph Curry takes a three.
Yeah. That'll be interesting. And does Beverly take a swipe at Curry at some point during the series? Ooh, would be interesting too.
You know, Beverly got that shot in on Russell. Well, let's put it out there. Was that a shot? The Russell Westbrook knee injury in 2014. Was that a shot?
No, but
it's the same thing as like, you know, because we talked ad nauseum like a year ago about Olynyk and Love. I thought that was like the dirtiest fucking play I've ever seen by Olynyk. Everyone else in the chat that we have, you know, the private one we have, they thought that Olynyk kind of just did what he was supposed to do when you get an armbar. I thought it was fucking dirty as fuck.
I think a lot of what Beverly does kind of falls into the same realm of like Dellavedova. Where, like, I don't know that they're out there to intentionally injure somebody. I think they're just, they play extremely hard and are even a little bit clumsy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a little bit different. Dellavedova, I think, he's not intentionally trying to hurt people, but,
he's
like,
just reckless.
He basically
does.
Well, no, I think he enjoys having the reputation of a guy who will hurt you.
Yeah.
Because it's a kind of a competitive advantage. Yeah. Whereas I think Beverly just plays at 100% and has no regard for his opponents. So, like, yeah. If he can dive through your ACL to get a loose ball, he'll do it.
Right.
But that's because I want the ball. It's not because I was trying to tear your knee up.
Like when Curry got his head out on that loose ball and Randolph gave him a nice shot to the head, was that by accident?
I don't recall the play too well, so I really can't comment. Ryan?
It was late in the last game.
I don't recall that one.
Yeah, I think someone like Beverly's kind of got a football player's mentality.
But well, here's the thing: like, are there openings for some of these players where they're like, you know, if I put a little hot sauce on this, I could probably get away with it because I know that the referees will probably assume that I was just trying to make a play, even though I am trying to hurt this guy.
I'm sure that happens at some point, but it's probably pretty rare.
It's not as rare as you think, though. I mean, Kevin Garnett's made a living out of it.
I mean, some players are probably more willing to do so, but
Bruce Bowen with the foot underneath the plant shooter, you know?
Yeah, but I think that's. I'm not trying to hurt you. I just don't care if you get hurt.
Which is the same thing.
No, like if. It. I guess I'm trying to think of how to.
I think I stumped Norman Rockwell.
No, I'm trying to think of a way to be articulate, and it's a really difficult thing for me. But, I guess I'm not trying to hurt you, but if you do get hurt, I don't care. It's the equivalent of like the Bart Simpson, I'm going to punch air, and if you happen to get in the air, it's your own fault.
Okay.
They don't play by the supposed unwritten code. Like people were like ripping on Dellavedova saying, we got a code, you know. You got to be concerned about, you know, other guys' careers and whatnot. Like, he's not trying to dive into your knee to tear your ACL. He's just diving wherever he's going to go. And, you know, if it's into your ACL, so be it. Like, okay. He's not worried about that.
Or as Greg Williams calls it, the outside ACL.
The outside ACL.
The outside ACL.
Affect the head. Continue to touch and affect the head.
And don't forget the money sign. The money sign. Yes. The one that Roger Goodell, the one that Roger Goodell himself saw. Don't worry.
It's a great game. It's a production business.
You've memorized the tape, haven't you?
I've listened to that, I think, so many times.
Do you listen to it in the morning to pump yourself up? The Greg Williams?
I've done it before.
Bounty Gate. I never forget. First of all, Bounty Gate never fucking happened. Just to get it out there for all the non-New Orleans fans that are listening to this show. Because we're all from New Orleans and we're all Saints fans. Except for Norman, who's, like we said. Are you a Saints fan?
No.
You see, exactly. Like, what are you a fan of? Like, that makes you great as, like, a neutral arbitrator for things like this. But, for, like, trying to figure out, like, what you like, it's like...
Norman, you ever regret giving up your season tickets?
No. I feel bad for the person who inherited them. Is that regret?
But didn't you sell the Laker tickets for the Pelicans for like triple the value?
It was like 10 times.
10 times the value?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was shocked.
And didn't he score 35 in that game?
I didn't watch it.
He killed. I was there. He destroyed us.
And you don't regret not going?
I didn't bother to look at the results, so no.
Well, you know, going to an NBA game, I mean, it is a little inconvenient, a little bit.
Really? Going to a live NBA game is inconvenient to you, the host of an NBA podcast? Who lives in a city with an NBA team? Well...
I can't be bothered.
Well, I'm sorry. A team that regularly hosts NBA teams?
Yeah. The Pelicans of the last 2 months have not been an NBA franchise.
I mean, Norman, how many times have you sold your tickets? Be honest. Like, give me a percentage of the actual games you've gone to for the Pelicans.
Legitimately, every game this season I've put on sale on like Ticket Exchange. And I went to the one
after you bought the season tickets when Alvin Gentry got hired because you were excited about the season.
That was Monty Williams who got fired.
Okay, no, I said when Alvin Gentry got hired is what I said. I thought.
Yes.
Okay, and you thought that it was going to be like our beacon of hope, so you bought season tickets.
Yes.
But how much value did you get out of selling it? You fucking barter.
Believe it or not, like, people really wanted to see Kobe and at the end of the year. And we had two games, I think one in late February around Mardi Gras and one in the last week of the season, which actually recouped most of my money, but not my tears.
Your tears?
Yes.
What tears? From the season?
Yes.
I mean, we're not here to talk about the Pelicans because they're not at the playoffs. But, you know, you got to be a real fan like Ryan. Ryan actually goes to the games.
I went to some.
You went to the Knicks game.
I went to the Knicks game and watched the Knicks.
I'm mad at Norman because...
The Knicks somehow lose to the D-League Pelicans.
I'm mad at Norman because he invited me to the Spurs game and he... I told Norman, I texted him that the day after the game. I said, "I'm sorry, Norman. I totally forgot to I said I totally forgot to mention that I wanted about the Spurs game. I'm sorry I didn't remind you." And Norman goes, "Oh, don't worry. I didn't remember to invite you anyway."
I don't recall that, but I assume it would be too inconvenient for you to go to the game.
I like like going to the live game just to see how ridiculous some like some teams are with their like rituals. Like Norman and I are sitting there watching like the Kings warm up, and apparently George Karl is just okay with like Willie Cauley Stein just shooting all his jumpers left handed for no reason.
Okay.
He's right handed.
I don't know. I like the Smoothie King Center. I've been to it. Why? It's a nice arena. There really is good seats at like the upper level. Like if you go in the upper level, there are pretty decent looks there to go to see the court. It's not like Staples where you feel like you're fucking like a mile away.
Have you been to the Staples Center?
No, but I've seen photos.
Okay.
I've seen photos from inside the arena. Okay. If Bogan is an agitator, if Bogan is a dirty player.
Back on track.
If Bogan is a dirty player.
Let's go back to that dirty Aussie.
And Green is an agitator. What is Matt Barnes? Is he just a gangster?
Well, Ryan, this is your territory. He's a Knicks fan.
Oh, yeah, no. He ain't letting Derek Fisher get away with nothing. No, he's going to put that boy on blast. Fish in his fly suits.
Well, the Grizzlies are weird because, like, I do like Lance Stephenson. I do. I've always been, like, a supporter of him. Am I crazy for supporting him?
Yes.
Why is that?
Because you support Lance Stephenson.
But, I mean, was there any hope for the Grizzlies even before, you know, all the injuries kicked in? Like, say, for example, Gasol doesn't get hurt, Conley doesn't get hurt with the Achilles. Like, what kind of chances would the Grizzlies had, say, against a team like the Spurs?
There's hope, but, I mean, they still would have been really kind of up against it.
Because, you know, they had a stretch.
Kind of, at this point, actually, it's not even a contrast in styles. Like, the Spurs are like another big team that just does what the Grizzlies do, except better. Great defensively, great size. Leonard will just eliminate whoever, you know. I guess, you know, in this series, the way it's going to be, they're just going to slap him on Stevenson. So,
I mean, are you
sad?
Well, it's just sad watching them kind of as they deteriorated due to the injuries. You know, Vince Carter, I mean, he just looks old. I mean, he is old, but he plays old. You know, some guys like Dirk Nowitzki, they're old as hell, but they play hard.
You know how old that makes me feel? But like Vince Carter is a grizzled veteran, like a 3-and-D, like stalwart, a defender of history the other night when he was trying to stop the Warriors from winning 70.
And then they have Xavier Mumford, who is like the black member of Mumford and Sons, I guess.
Possibly. I wouldn't recognize the other members of Mumford and Sons. I hate their music. I know that.
Well, they all have. I would have to assume they're hipsters, so they have beards, like very like Jeremy, like if Jeremy Lin's like it's like the reverse Jeremy Lin, where you had like stylish,
where he never draws a flagrant foul.
Oh, you read that? You saw that YouTube? You saw that?
Yeah.
There's a YouTube video out there that Jeremy Lin never gets. He never draws flagrant fouls, so people just let him get murdered. Which is dumb.
I haven't seen the video, but.
I think Jeremy Lin might have taken for granted like his status as a celebrity, because like he played like in New York and in L.A. and even in, you know, even in Houston, which was a big NBA city. He goes to Charlotte and then like just comes up with that hair. I think his hair is a cry for attention.
Oh, so you're going like, oh, it's like psychotherapeutic here.
I think so. I'm asking the group. You know, to analyze Jeremy Lin.
I can't analyze Jeremy Lin. Mm-hmm. He's just a decent six man who
plays in Charlotte.
Yeah, he plays at Charlotte.
He's someone who's making $2 million a year, and
well, that's a bet. That's a great deal for Charlotte at the end.
And the Pelicans paid Omar Asik $10 or $11 million a year
for 5 years.
Well, the Pelicans eventually, four total. The Pelicans eventually found a point guard with Ish Smith and then traded him.
And not only that, they sent him to Philadelphia. And Philadelphia is the island of misfit toys. It's not even a real NBA team. But, I mean, Ish Smith played well, you know, it, to a point where, like, who were we playing at the end? James Ennis?
He was one of our better players, yeah.
You know, Tony Douglas was – I mean, was Tony Douglas at the end of the year? Because I know he played for, like two or three different teams.
Oh, Tony Douglas was one of the only people to not fall at the feet of Ochsner. Like, he was pretty consistent all year. Like, consistent as in, like, you know, he was available. Like, the best the best ability is availability, as, like, the Mark Slavrefs of the world would say. Yeah, that's Tony Douglas. He was there all year.
Russ Smith for the Grizzlies, he scored 65 points in a D-League game.
Really?
Yeah, I don't even know if he'll be on the roster, though.
Rusticulous?
Rusticulous. And oh, then they got Briante Weber, who was from VCU. Jarrell Martin from LSU, he's actually played decently. 5 points and three rebounds.
Briante Weber was the one that like put up like the absurd steal stats, I think, in college.
He led the league in steal. He led the country in steals 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
But he tore his ACL his senior year, so he didn't get drafted. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Chalmers is also out with the Achilles. Not only that, they waived him. You know, they got Tony Allen, who is Tony Allen. You know, I feel bad for our guy Brad Sison because he's a huge Grizzlies guy. And now I'm trying to, like, petition that he gets a new team.
You might not have to petition hard. He tried to join me in Knicks fandom when they had Baron Davis, and I think like just the swamp of sadness was too much for him, so he got out.
So when he broke his kneecap, he was just like, "That's it, I'm out."
Yeah, pretty much. So you know what? That's fine.
I mean, Brad is like the biggest Baron Davis fan ever. He like did the D League appearance, and he literally live streamed. It was like Rocky with the NFL draft. Like he literally live streamed all the Baron Davis games in the D League.
He gave live play by play of the Drew League in our chat group.
So is there anything to actually like pick apart about the Spurs Grizzly series? Because I mean, it seems like pretty much a, you know, a 4-0 sweep.
Is Conley playing the series, or no. Did he decide? I'm just not going to risk injury.
No, Achilles, he's done.
Oh, he had an Achilles injury? I didn't even realize that.
He had a bad Achilles. It's not torn, but he has an Achilles.
Oh, it's just a sore Achilles.
But it's very, very likely he's not going to play. Very likely.
He shouldn't
throw bad money after good right now.
You know,
yeah, he's a free agent this offseason. He's going to get paid.
The biggest weakness that I see Grizzlies could take advantage of is that the Spurs don't get to the free throw line a lot because they're more of an execution type of team. They're not a drawing fouls type of team. But the Grizzlies are fourth in getting to the free throw line. That's the one thing that really – and also they're seventh in points allowed, but their defensive efficiency is shit. They're 19th in defensive efficiency. So that's the only thing I can see where the Grizzlies could take advantage. Just attacking them, banging inside, and getting free.
Yeah, but the problem is like Duncan and Leonard, and I'm not sure about Aldridge, but they're really good at not fouling.
Mm-hmm. Aldridge's really good at not fouling too.
Who's that?
Aldridge is good at not fouling too.
Yeah, so I'm not sure how well that will work. I am curious to see if Danny Green is going to do anything because he's been slumping really hard and they're going to need him against Golden State.
He's been slumping hard all year, am I right?
Yes.
Like his percentage overall has just been down. The Spurs had 67 wins. It was the best season they've ever had in the regular season, but you know, Green, he's played okay, but he hasn't been great. I mean, the guy who's been incredible has been Leonard, and also Robot, or as Norman Rockwell calls him, Robot, LaMarcus Aldridge.
That's actually a Zach Lowe, Spurs basketball robot. I think he lied from him a few years ago, which I really like.
Terrell Robinson, who did the Spurs podcast with me and Will a week ago, he was with us, me and Norm, and Terrell, we were watching the Spurs-Warriors game in San Antonio. Literally every time LaMarcus Aldridge took a shot, and LaMarcus, I think, got 29 points in that game, Norman would go, "Robot." It was like when – what would David West always say when he would take a shot? And one?
Yes.
And like Carlos Boozer would always say, "Hey."
I just remember Boozer yelling, "Get it, Joe."
No, every time he gets contact, Carlos Boozer would go, "Hey!" every yeah. single time.
No, I just remember him being under the basket yelling, "Get it, Joe," at Joe Kim Noah.
Get it, Joe. But yeah, every time LaMarcus would take a mid-range shot, Norman in the middle of Buffalo Wild Wings would say robot. And
that was probably Kawhi.
What's that?
That was probably Kawhi.
Why? So Kawhi and LaMarcus Aldridge are both Spurs robots? Like, has Kawhi graduated to robot mode?
No, Kawhi is the original and the only one.
He's the only robot?
Yes.
Okay. So, but let me ask you this. Who's more important for that team, Aldridge or Leonard?
Leonard.
Like, by how much?
Three.
Three times as important, you mean?
The number three.
I still don't get it.
I don't either. I wasn't quite sure how to answer that question.
I asked this to Terrell, and he was kind of hard. It was hard for him. In terms of, like, long-term, and I'm going to send this to both Ryan and you, who is more important to the Spurs franchise as a whole, Parker or Ginobili?
Parker.
Like, by a good bit?
I mean, they're both really good, but Parker for a while was just the engine that made that offense go. And like, that really is only kind of stopped this year.
It seemed like Ginobili peaked a little earlier than Parker did, right?
Well, that's probably because he's significantly older.
Well, how old was Ginobili when he came in? He was like, what, 23 in 2008?
Oh, I think he was older than that when his first season.
Yeah, so his peak was like the late 2000, like 2005 through 2007, maybe 2008. And then he had the ankle injury after the Olympics in China, and then he really took a dip, you know. And then they had Parker.
25. Yeah. Ginobili's first season was at 25 years old.
Yeah, and Parker, here's the thing, though, for Parker. Between 14 and 15, he really took a drop. He did. Like, I mean, Chris Paul outplayed him so badly, whereas the year before, Parker was good enough where he was almost outplaying Russell Westbrook in the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was under the impression that Parker's hamstring problems were causing issues that series, but I mean, he's kind of getting up there in age, and as a smaller player, it's hard. They don't age as well. When those guys start losing a step of quickness, like, their game's built on that. So it's pretty difficult for a guy who's as small as Parker, who relies mostly on his speed, to age well, which is one of the things that makes Chris Paul's this season pretty impressive. He's a guy that's kind of defining the aging curve in that regard.
There's a few problems I have, though, with Paul.
Define.
Like, once we get past the first round, you know, like, I got some problems with Paul. But, I mean, we're talking about the first round.
I got a problem with Paul after the first round, and his name is Stephen Curry.
Okay, so we're going to just move ahead to the Clippers and the Blazers. It's a 4-5. You know, the 4-5 in the East is, to me, like, because we were talking about betting lines and, you know, like, solid picks, you know, and I think Atlanta-Boston is the toughest one. Would y'all agree?
I'd say probably Charlotte-Miami is probably a closer
series. I think Miami's going to win that one in six.
I think I'll agree with you, Andrew. I'll say Boston and Atlanta is actually one of the series I'm most looking forward to.
Yeah, both teams are pretty well balanced. Even though, I'll be honest with Boston, when I look at their team stats, they sort of have a little bit of patchwork there. There's a few things where you can definitely take advantage of the Celtics.
I'm actually really curious to see, because last year I wasn't too impressed with Brad Stevens' coaching job against... In the playoffs against Cleveland, just in the playoffs.
Norman Rockwell is saying that he is not impressed with Brad Stevens.
Well, I expected more.
Because you're a huge Brad Stevens fanboy. Like,
yes.
You think he is...
Yeah, I'm actually...
You think he is like young robot Popovich?
Yes. I'm actually really curious in that series, just the coaching matchup between a Budenholzer and Stevens, to see who I think adjusts better, what they do, how that series goes. So that's the most interesting part of that series to me.
Yeah, and when Budenholzer...
Oh, they played last week, and that was a fun game to watch. I think it was... I think they each had 70 points at halftime.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Atlanta won that one, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, Atlanta's a little different. I mean, we're just kind of going all across, you know, both conferences here when we're talking about it, just because we're just keeping it loose here. But when it comes to the Atlanta, you know, their balance I think is a lot better than Boston's, but I don't know if Atlanta's got a player better than Isaiah Thomas. Would y'all agree?
No.
I'd say
Millsap's a lot better than Isaiah Thomas.
You know, how good is Millsap really defensively, though? Because I remember him having to check LeBron because of injuries, and LeBron was literally laughing at him while he was, like, beating him on the fast break.
Millsap's a really good defensive player.
So what you're saying is you think that Millsap's not a good defender because he had trouble with LeBron?
Yes. Yes.
How would you think Isaiah Thomas would do against LeBron?
Yeah, but the difference there is that LeBron kind of plays power forward now, right?
He's religiously opposed to playing power forward.
But he tried. But they still kind of give him even with Tyronn Lue, they still give him those little setups where they put him in the pinch post, and if he wants to go deep post, he can. You know, it's basically his option. He's like he's about 12 feet away from the basket. It's like not at the elbow, but like maybe about 3 feet ahead of the box, and whatever he wants to do, he can do it.
Yeah, and he typically posts up smaller players. He's not really posting up, you know, larger. He's not posting up like David West type players or someone like Millsap. He's kind of posting up when teams put a smaller guy on him.
Yeah, and there's going to be no Damari Carroll this time. So, like, what is Ken Bazemore going to be able to do when you get guys like Evan Turner?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say I crossed my wires. I was going to say Damari Carroll just came back, but no, he's with Toronto now. My bad. But R-Truth, my bad.
You had an R-Truth moment?
Yes, definitely.
You got to put the ladder back. And so we got to get back to the Clippers and the Blazers here because here's the problem with the West in general. This is why we're kind of like we're keeping it loose here because the Western Conference first round just does not have really that much intrigue. It really doesn't.
I disagree, but the intrigue isn't so much in who wins each series is kind of a foregone conclusion. Maybe the Blazers have a chance. That's the only team that really has a chance of an upset. But like to me, the intrigue isn't so much in who's going to win. It's how do these teams look going into round two?
I don't think that matters either.
Well, I guess to me it's like, well, there are things that Houston presents against the Warriors. Well, I'm curious to see how the Warriors respond. How often do they play the death lineup? What adjustments does Houston do to someone copy that? In the the Mavericks Thunder. I don't see anything. I think
that's
a horrible matchup.
We kind of skimmy that one too. But for the Mavericks and the Thunder. Like, the problem with the Mavericks is that defensively, they're really not that great, but they've sort of kind of gotten their way back into the playoffs and broke that losing streak by slowing games down and playing defense. But, I mean, defensively, I mean, they're like middle of the pack and like everything, rebounding. Here's the funniest part. They play big, but they're 29th in block shots. Like, I don't even know how that's possible.
Well, I mean, they only have one, I guess, Pachulia is the only shot blocker they have.
Well, they got Majiri, too. Who averages one block a game.
Yeah, well. You know. Well, no, actually, that series, I guess the interesting thing is, does Scotty Brooks do anything? I mean, not Scotty.
Does
Scotty Brooks 2.0 do anything really dumb?
Oh, you're killing on Billy Donovan, too, just like Adam Murray does?
Yes.
Like, is he worse than Scotty Brooks?
I think so.
Wow. Scotty Brooks was pretty bad, man.
Brooks was a horrible tactician.
He had Shaq and Kobe Android version, and he couldn't get to the final. He got to the finals only one time.
He's a horrible tactician. He makes a ton of errors in terms of lineups and kind of like the more tangible things. But the team, he got guys to play harder, I believe, than Brooks. I'm sorry, than Donovan, Brooksovan.
Well, they're not. Would you call the Thunder a complete team? Like, is it safe? I mean, they had a great year. If you look at their point differential, they're better than Cleveland is. So, I mean, are they a complete team, or is it just another makeshift Oklahoma City team with not ready for primetime players who's just got two great, great players.
I mean, they have two top five players. It's crazy that they have two top five players in the NBA, and they're kind of an afterthought in terms of the title. Like, that's probably never happened in NBA history.
Because when you go to the bench, you have routine lineups of Randy Foy, Deion Waiters, and Enes Kanter.
And
Brooks will play them all together without Westbrook or Durant, like, many times.
You just did again. You called him Brooks.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
It's like he never left.
Billy Brooks.
Billy
Brooks.
I mean.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. Does Donovan stagger Durant and Westbrook? Is there any moments when they're not playing on the floor? How dead are they? Can Kanter squeeze together a little bit of defensive intensity and not be a complete turnstile in limited minutes? Like, is he still going to stat hunt and chase offensive rebounds and completely ignore transition defense in the playoffs?
Now, you are a huge proponent that, well, you know, you said this last year. You thought Russell Westbrook was the league MVP. Right?
I will say I'm a confirmed idiot for saying that last year, yes.
Okay. All right, well, let's see where this goes. Is Russell Westbrook just as good of a player as Steph Curry?
No.
Oh, come on. Like, how much better is Steph Curry than Russell Westbrook as a point guard? So you think that Russell Westbrook's just chasing stats now? You've turned heel on Russell Westbrook.
By saying he's not as good as Steph Curry?
No, by saying that you were stupid for thinking he could have been league MVP.
I underestimated what Curry meant to that team last year.
Oh, okay. Oh, because all of a sudden Steph Curry is stat hunting.
No, just because I think I didn't realize until the finals how much Curry was the engine that drove the entire offense.
You're just saying that because Alvin Gentry sucked with the Pelicans. That's the only reason you're saying any of this.
No, he was terrible, but that's irrelevant.
Isn't it hilarious that Alvin Gentry left the Warriors and they won more games without him? They had, like, one of the best teams ever.
That's a real knee slapper as a Pelicans fan. I know. I was in stitches.
You're going to be singing the Stitches song all of a sudden.
As a Pelicans fan especially, the fucking Ochsner Stitches song.
The New Orleans Ochsners. But now, Russell Westbrook, let me put it this way. Kevin Durant, you would still consider him, like, the alpha male on that team compared to Westbrook? Or do you feel like there's a little push?
Bad terminology, I would say.
He's the best player. He's not the alpha male on the team.
No.
Who's the alpha male of the team?
Russell Westbrook in every room he's ever been in his life.
But do you feel like that's got a little bit of Shaq and Kobe vibe to it? But Shaq kind of had that sort of dominance too with him where he wanted to be the man everywhere he was. But Kobe obviously was a super aggressive, super competitive guy too. So do you think there's a little bit of trepidation there?
No, because I think Durant is more willing to not – Durant's personality isn't as demanding as Westbrook's.
Well, he's been a little frosty lately with the media, a little more than normal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's that part. And Russell Westbrook's renowned for being a dick to the media. He just is, you know. Remember when Reggie Jackson, he said, who?
Well, he hates Reggie Jackson because Reggie Jackson hated them.
So like, when
that was just a bad Reggie Jackson, I think, has never thought he wasn't the best player on his team. And in Oklahoma City, that was not the
But case. Here's the funny part. It's got that Stockholm syndrome, but he's played well in Detroit.
Yeah, he's getting playing time, and I think He was one of those guys that could not wait to get off a winning team to go and play somewhere else where, you know, maybe they won't win as much, but he's the man.
But here's the thing.
Doesn't
that just show more of how great Russell Westbrook is, that his backup point guard was so driven to be just as good as him that it turned a naturally mediocre point guard into a good point guard?
I think Stan Van Gundy had more to do with that than anything, but No, I mean, but Westbrook is, yeah, Westbrook is exceptional.
So, and that's, so the Mavericks, I mean, how many potential wins do they have here in the series?
It, given the talent differential here, if they would win more than a game, it would either be a miracle or a huge testament to Carlisle's coaching versus Donovan. So two wins.
Carlisle is a smart guy.
I mean, I was going to say two wins.
Yeah. Oklahoma City should not lose more than one game in this series unless Carlisle just coaches circles around Donovan, which he probably will.
Well, he's – I mean, I'm not trying to say, like, outsmarting Eric Spoelstra and LeBron James was, like, genius, but the way he did that in the 2011 finals was, like, a masterstroke.
Oh, no, Carlisle is one of the league's best coaches. Like, yeah. That they're even in the playoffs.
The most amazing one was when they went seven games with the Spurs in 2014. I still don't know how they did that.
That was their hardest series.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know how they did that. You know, Dirk Nowitzki could barely fucking play. You know, they won one where Vince Carter hit like a baseline three to win it, where it looked like they were dead.
Here's the one of the most impressive things to me. Look at them this year. Dirk didn't even have a great season, and they're in the playoffs anyway. Like, look,
they don't
at that
even
roster.
Have Chandler Parsons.
That is not a good roster.
Yeah, and Wes Matthews, or as Norman now forever calls him, Wes Achilles, because he had the torn Achilles, and because that was one bet I did win where I said that Wes was going to get more than was going to make more money than Chris Middleton. And
yeah, which I don't understand.
And I only won that bet because DeAndre Jordan shunned the Mavericks, which forced Cuban to give Wes more money to make sure he doesn't leave.
And Wes shot a robust 39% as a reward.
Well, do you think he's a bad player now? Or do you think he had a tough year?
He had a poor season. I mean, it's very rare that a guy comes off an Achilles injury like that and, you know, comes back strong, you know, especially in the first year.
He scored 60 in his last game.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Kobe Bryant, mind you, is one of the only people that Wes Matthews outshot this season.
They also have They have Western Conference Player of the Week, J.J. Barea.
They do. Oh, yeah, my favorite player, the Normans.
Are you serious?
No.
And then there's...
I hate him.
there's Zaza Pachulia. There's Raymond Felton, who's actually...
Fat Ray Felton.
Well, he's led the team in scoring a few times, unbelievably.
And they're in the playoffs. Again, they're in the playoffs. How did this happen?
Well, the Utah Jazz almost made the playoffs, and they just lost to Kobe Bryant. I don't know what else to say about that.
I mean, I'm looking like...
Let me tell you, Ryan, the bottom of the West was bad. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking at it right. I'm looking at this Mavericks team. I don't know how Carlisle got him here.
So you think this is one of these happy-to-be-here things?
No, I mean, they're gonna play real hard, and he'll, you know, he might be able to steal a game or two, you know, because of the coaching. But I mean, yeah, they can't. They're zero to beat Oklahoma City. I mean, it would have to be like, you know, Nowitzki would have to turn back the clock and pull something we haven't seen.
All right, Norm, you have some interesting things you wanted to talk about with the Clippers and the Blazers. Like, where the matchups with Lillard and C.J. McCollum, who's just had a terrific year. He's going to be the most improved player for sure. He might be unanimous there. And then you got the Clippers, who got all that crazy talent. You got Blake Griffin coming off of that injury. He only played 35 games. But you think this is actually going to be closer than a lot of people think?
I think it'll be interesting. Griffin hasn't played well in his five or so games back from injury/suspension.
That's a small sample size, though.
Yes, but he hasn't played well. He hasn't played well in any of those games. I think he actually had a decent game against the Mavericks in there, but he hasn't looked too good. I'm really curious to see with the Blazers now, with Myers Leonard being hurt and them going full time with Aminu at the four. That's an interesting matchup against Griffin. I'm curious to see, like, can Griffin punish Aminu due to a size difference? And it would be interesting because Aminu actually does have speed to stay with Griffin in the open floor, and that's traditionally one of like the big advantages Griffin has. And when they bench, when Paul comes out of the game, how well does King Griffin run the offense?
Well, that was how
because last year through maybe the first two rounds of the playoffs, Griffin looked like the best player in the league.
Oh yeah, I thought in the playoffs he was the best player.
Yeah,
I mean he destroyed the Rockets in that series,
mm-hmm.
and the Spurs. I mean he really kind of gave it to Tim Duncan almost that entire series.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Duncan was matched up with DeAndre Jordan a lot, but the moments where they would switch and Griffin wind up on Duncan, Griffin just killed Duncan. You know, that was pretty much the main reason the Clippers won that series. But, you know, Redick's played really well. I would almost argue this was the best season Redick's ever had. Or, you know, I could maybe say last year because his 3-point percentage was better that year.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and Chris Paul, you talked about how he was able to kind of get through the Blake absence, play well in the month of January. He almost averaged 10 assists a game again, two steals, still an elite level. But, you know, the big question with Chris Paul is going to obviously, like Ryan was talking about, go to the round after that, see if he can step up there because he just hasn't been able to do it. Obviously, the big weakness there is Wes Johnson is starting, but Paul Pierce has been waiting in the wings all year long because they did not want to play him a lot. Do you feel like he's playing possum, or is Paul Pierce just completely washed up for good?
I don't think Paul Pierce has got the speed or mobility. He's going to be kind of a stretch four at this point in this series.
But can he do what he did with the Wizards, where he can just kind of pop up and win a game for you?
I don't think so. I think Portland's got too much depth at the wing positions that they're gonna not allow him to do too well. He's been so bad this year.
I got two questions. How did Austin Rivers get 35 points in a game, and how did Pablo Prigioni get 8 steals in a game?
Nepotism. And I don't know.
Europhiles?
My answer to Prigioni is nepotism. What was that you said, Norman?
Oh, Europhiles.
Europhiles. Who's in the EuroLeague Final Four this year? Is it already over?
I actually don't know. I haven't followed the EuroLeague this year.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Norman Rockwell has not followed EuroLeague this season. That shocked
nope.
me. Is it because do you think the American game is sort of brilliantly co-opted international basketball? To a point where, like, we got the Olympics in Rio de Janeiro. Like, there's literally no chance that the Americans can lose because they've basically stolen all the shooters.
Yeah, I actually think that was a big thing a few years ago. I think going back to, like, the 2004 Olympic team and forward
they couldn't shoot. Yeah.
They couldn't shoot, and they really didn't play pick-and-roll basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like, after Mike D'Antoni's Suns, I think all the better elements of the Euro games kind of been adopted to the NBA, and they've expanded on that. So there, previously, where there was a talent disadvantage in the for Team USA in the Olympics, I'm sorry, talent advantage, but a tactical disadvantage. Now the U.S. is a tactical advantage and better talent. So they're just blowing through teams now.
With the Clippers. The two things, I mean, here's the thing about the Clippers. If you look across the board, points per game, field goal percentage, offensive efficiency, three-pointers made, three-point percentage, getting to the free throw line, experience, taking care of the ball. They're, like, great at everything, but there's two huge problems. And one is obviously because of DeAndre Jordan. Free throw percentage, and the other one is team rebounding, because even though DeAndre Jordan averages 13.8 rebounds per game, The next best one is Blake Griffin at 8.4, and the next best one after that is Cole Aldrich at 4.7 rebounds. I mean, is it just a matter of that they just don't – they're not tenacious at getting after missed shots?
I think first of all, they don't have a third big. You know, the two guys you just mentioned up top before Aldrich, like, you know, Aldridge is their third big. They don't really have another big man on the roster. It's a bunch of bad wings.
Yeah, but, you know, a lot of teams don't have really good third true bigs, though.
So. Yeah, but they really don't. And then their wings aren't good rebounders either. What's that?
Who are their wings?
Jeff Green.
Wesley Johnson. It's a collection of like a who's who of who's bad. Like Jeff Green, Wesley Johnson, Pierce at this point.
I think Jeff Green still got a little bit left in him. I do.
I don't know if he's ever had anything in him. I mean, I think he can defend. I think he's a decent like one-on-one defender, but like I don't know that he's ever made one of his teams better.
And Jamal Crawford and J.J. Redick are not rebounding guards. They never have.
This has been the issue with the Clippers. They have four good players, and then they fall off a cliff.
Their bench is still bad. Yeah.
Their bench is atrocious, and it's been for Doc Rivers' entire stay there.
Well, they'd signed Josh Smith and Lance, and by the end of the year, they were shipped.
I'm going to be curious to see how Stotts kind of plays it, because Portland's bench isn't good either, but they do have two guards that can create. I'm wondering if they might have that he might try to stagger it to where he gets McCollum against the Clippers bench.
That could
be somewhere they can make some hay, you know.
They're going to stagger Lillard and McCollum, so one's on the floor all game.
Yeah.
Yeah. How does the Lillard-McCollum thing work? Because the thing is, they're such small guards, and we've seen that try to work with, like, for example, when they had, like, Allen Iverson play with, like, a smaller guard when he was with the Nuggets, where it just doesn't really work that well, but it just somehow works with Lillard and McCollum. Why does it work?
There's kind of a lack of really good two guards who can expose them. Or, like, there's almost a two or three... Like, there are so few quality wings in the NBA, and they're so valuable that no team's got two, where you can't just hide one of them on the opposing team's two or three.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Allen Crabbe is sneaky good, or he's just riding the coattails of the true shooting percentage of Lillard and McCollum?
Oh, I think he's a pretty good 3-and-D kind of wing guy, just because there aren't that many in the league.
Yeah, he'll be a free agent next year.
He'll get paid. He'll get one of those contracts that people are surprised at how much he got paid.
Okay, so we're going a little long here, and we're just going to have to go ahead and just run through the gamut here, because you've wasted my time a lot for Norman. And I blame you, Norman. It's all your fault. You know,
love you too, buddy.
So, Western Conference Finals. Let's just go through it, okay? You've got chalk there in the first round.
Yes.
Okay. Ryan, same? Or you see same. Any injury?
Same.
Okay. Second round, that's where the fun begins. Would you agree?
Yes.
Okay. Any surprises here? Warriors-Clippers, even in a romp, is fun because they fucking hate each other.
I don't think it'll be a romp. You know, I wouldn't call it a romp. I don't think.
Well, I'm not saying it's a romp. I'm saying if it were one, I would still watch it.
I'm calling it a romp.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think Warriors win in five. I think Clippers take one.
Okay. So let's go through that series. Who's the best player in that series?
Oh, Steph Curry by a mile.
Who's the second best player in that series?
Probably Blake Griffin.
I don't know.
Or do you think Blake Griffin's got like that Nick Andersonitis, where that injury and the embarrassment of the whole thing is gonna kind of like fuck with his head?
That injury. I mean, you know, we'll see if he rounds back in the form.
Yeah, but do you think that whole thing might kind of wear on his mental state?
I'm worried
he might get traded and all that stuff.
I'm worried that basically he came back from a hand injury and just proceeded to brick mid-range jumpers all game long.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, Paul's the second best player in that series.
So you think Paul's the second best player?
Yeah.
Okay.
So where were you going with that point, Norman?
Basically, I was going to say that the Warriors have top three players are better top four players are better than the Clippers' top four players.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're much better than the Clippers.
And then the bottom completely falls out, and then the Clippers have only four good players.
Mm-hmm.
And you think the depth will kick in? I mean, depth is kind of – I'll say this, in the NCAA tournament, depth is definitely overrated with teams. But in the NBA playoffs, do you think depth is overrated?
It's more important in the regular season. But basically, when you have a team like the Clippers where as soon as they pull anyone off the bench, like, it's a train wreck. And, like – like the Clippers starters need to outplay your starters by a pretty decent margin to compensate for their bench, just to keep even.
And you said something about Steph Curry's plus minus being positive every time he was on the court this year.
Literally. I'm not sure. I think that's still accurate, but yeah, at some point late this season, he never had a negative plus minus.
So basically, whenever he's on the court, you can't score more than his team.
Yes.
Ever.
And then basically, if they go to the death lineup, they're going to destroy that team.
Okay, Spurs Thunder. Now that's fun.
It's fun, and I mean, the Thunder aren't drawing dead there. I mean, they do have two of, if not the two best players in the series.
See.
But Popovich over Donovan is—I said Donovan and not Brooks. But that's
I was going to correct. Bill, I was going to correct
Scotty Donovan.
Yeah,
I was going to correct you and say Brooks.
Yeah.
Actually, this is why I believe the Dallas OKC series is interesting, because if Brooksovin looks like a complete fish out of water.
Now he's German.
against Carlisle.
And he is.
Well, it depends. Like, I guess how good or how bad he is in that series will be very telling going forward. If he's completely abysmal and lets Carlisle steal two games, then you can pretty much just stick a fork in the Thunder against the Spurs. But if he can actually play better lineups and like show more than he's shown this season, then you may have a competitive series. Because I think given a slight coaching disadvantage, the Thunder have a pretty good shot in the series.
I don't think it's going to be a slight. I mean, even if Carlisle doesn't take two games, it's going to be more of a slight coaching disadvantage against Popovich. So.
And Westbrook matchup-wise has always been a problem for the Spurs. I mean, Tony Parker... He did well in the 2014 Western Conference Finals against Westbrook, but I don't know now. I really don't. Like, I think Russell Westbrook will completely outplay all of San Antonio's guards.
Oh, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, Westbrook, I call Westbrook a top five player in the league.
So do you have chalk here with the Golden State Warriors beating the Clippers and the Spurs beating the Thunder?
I have the Spurs winning with the caveat of if Brooks shows me something against Dallas.
Brooks. Always Brooks.
It'll always be Scotty Brooks till the day.
Yes.
Well, if Kevin Durant leaves, will he still be Scotty Brooks? Because Scotty Brooks might coach the Wizards to try to goad, which is the hilariously, to goad Kevin Durant into going there.
I remember when Brooks' worst sin was just always playing Perkins, and now I see Gentry do that.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot.
I just wanted to bring that up.
Thanks for reminding me of Gentry. Okay, so you got
Scotty doesn't know if he's going to take that job in
Scotty doesn't know.
Washington just to get Kevin Durant, thinking that's going to bring Kevin Durant there.
So Ryan, do you have Spurs versus Warriors in the?
Yeah, I have Spurs versus Warriors.
All right.
I really want to get Warriors versus OKC. Mm-hmm.
That would be fun.
But I'm trying to think of a way it could happen. So that's what I'm left with. I'm trying to will.
Do you think OKC can give certain problems to the Warriors?
I think OKC has the best chance of beating the Warriors of any other team in the
league. I think the Spurs. Yeah. I'm gonna go out on a limb. I think the Spurs are gonna beat the Warriors.
You're alone on that limb.
Yeah, I can't join you to break that limb. No.
So I'm just hanging on that limb. I mean,
hot take.
Uh huh.
Warriors have a coaching advantage in that series.
Oh, so Steve Kerr is superior to Greg Popovich.
He has been for a year and a half.
Well, you know, Cam Newton was the best quarterback in the league for a year.
No, he wasn't.
And about a year and like what, maybe three games?
No, he wasn't.
Who was the best quarterback that year? Don't say Brock Osweiler. I know you're reaching for hot takes right now because NFL hot takes is your thing. That is, I mean, I got to say this for Norman Rockwell. This guy is an NFL like Zeitgeist genius. I don't know how he thinks up. He literally thinks up the dumbest shit, and it actually happens in the NFL. I don't know how it happens. It's almost dangerous. It's almost dangerous how he just picks something and then it happens in the NFL.
Easily.
Like Brock Osweiler beating Tom Brady head-to-head in a Sunday night football matchup.
Tom Brady.
So Brady was the best quarterback.
Yes.
Okay. Spurs Warriors, you got the Warriors easily?
Oh, Spurs, yeah.
Is this a Norm trademark easily right here?
Yes.
That might come back. That bet might come back to you.
It hasn't happened yet.
Okay, so if it's Spurs Warriors, this is on a podcast. $5 bet.
No one's going to listen to this.
Well, we get about... yeah, you're probably right.
No one's going to make it to this point in the podcast.
I don't think you're going to listen. I think you're going to listen back. I don't think you're going to get to this
point. Made it to this point in the podcast, and I'm on the podcast.
Okay, if anyone listening to this, friend request me on Facebook at Norman Rockwell. Send me a message. I'll ship you $5 if you make it to this point. The first person that tells me that they made it this far, I will send you $5.
Is this your look, Mom, famous moment?
Because
I just made you famous. I mean, I'm just saying I'm kind of a big deal.
Check your messages, Norman.
Yeah. I'm the Mike Florio.
Okay, Ryan, you can't send me a message saying you made it this far.
I'm the Mike Florio.
You have to actually listen to this damn thing.
Yeah, and we got about – I think we went a little longer than this, than we normally do. Okay.
Send me a Facebook message. The first person that says, quote, I made it this far and gives me their PayPal information, I'll ship them $5.
Thank you for completely debasing the podcast appearance you were on. That's a great way to promote future appearances.
Hey, it's a good way to promote listenership. At some point in the podcast,
Terrell Robinson never made fun of me when I was trying to do the Spurs episode. Not once. He never.
It was a Spurs episode.
What's that?
Because it was a Spurs episode.
I didn't make fun of you.
Well, you. I don't know. You're hurting my feelings right now. You kind of hurt my feelings.
You're just mad because you're not eligible to win $5.
So $5 bet. $5 bet. Interactive.
I play Skype, by your damn rule.
Interactive Skype handshake. Spurs, Warriors. I say Spurs, you say Warriors.
I'll take it.
Okay, there you go. Ryan Arena, Spurs, Warriors.
I also say Warriors.
All right, East, really quick. Conference semis. Just give me the prediction of conference semis.
Let's see.
Cleveland Detroit winner will play the Boston Atlanta winner.
Cleveland over Boston.
You think Boston is kind of out to get Cleveland? You think no. Boston can give them trouble?
No.
I think Boston. I think Brad Stevens can give them some problems.
Define problems.
Kyrie Irving has a lot of trouble guarding Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley.
So is problems 2 games?
Yeah, 6 games.
I'll take under 6 games.
Really?
Yes.
Like if they went to the second round. Like,
yes.
So if that series goes 6 games.
I
would win.
Yes.
Man, we did a 3-prong bet last year. I'll think about that.
Boston can push them to 6 games.
Okay, and then the other one is the Toronto-Indiana winner would play against the Heat-Hornets winner.
So there'll be 2 NBA TV series followed by an NBA TV conference semi?
Toronto-Indiana is the NBA TV one because they got 2 games in the first 4 games. Like, 2 of the first 4 games... that are already on the schedule.
I can't believe we didn't get a Charlotte Atlanta NBA TV series.
That would have been a guarantee. That would have been a guarantee. If it was Charlotte Atlanta, it would have been.
If you had to come up with the best NBA TV series, what 2 teams would you pick?
It would probably be
Atlanta and Indiana always.
Well, that happened in 2013.
Milwaukee's got to be involved.
No, does it have to say within the confines of the conference?
For the rules of this game, yes.
Okay. Probably Memphis versus...
No, the crowd's too good.
Memphis versus Phoenix. That would be a really small crowd.
No, more than a Milwaukee series?
Market size would be really small for that.
More than a Milwaukee versus...
Well, Milwaukee-Chicago was on TNT.
That's because it featured Chicago.
Yeah.
Let's see, Milwaukee versus
Brooklyn.
Oh, Detroit. Milwaukee, Detroit's my pick.
I remember twice watching Milwaukee play Detroit. That was in 04 and 06. I remember that.
Wait, is that Ray Allen?
That was Michael Red years. Terry Porter was the head coach.
Oh, God.
Actually, Andrew Bogut was the number one pick, and he was a rookie one of those years. Rookie Andrew Bogut. Rookie dirty player Andrew Bogut.
Yeah, so I guess it is strange. I'm thinking the Warriors-Rockets series will feature one first overall player picked first overall in his draft. No, two.
Mm-hmm. So Toronto-Indiana winner. You say Indiana, right?
I'm saying Toronto, but I think it'll be closer than people are
thinking. You got hot money on Indiana.
Yes.
Okay. Ryan, you got you got Toronto playing against the Heat?
No, I have the Heat versus Indiana.
The Heat.
I like Indiana to pull that up.
So you think Paul George? You think one will beat two? You think George will beat DeRozan and Lowry?
Yes.
Okay. And so conference finals, what you got?
I got Cleveland and Miami. I get the LeBron.
You are a pro wrestling fan, Ryan. You can tell you're a pro wrestling fan. You are trying to book this to where because you know, we all know watching the games that LeBron's got a soft spot for Miami. He won't finish them off. I don't know why. It's like I'm trying to find the best wrestling comparison for this happening where like a guy wants to beat the shit out of this guy, but he can't because he has.
Is he gonna tell Wade, "I'm sorry, I love you"?
Yeah. It's gonna be we're waiting for the WrestleMania 24 super kick in the conference finals from LeBron. And Dwayne Wade is going to be like doing.
Yeah, Dwayne Wade's going to try to bust his ass. So LeBron better lose that soft spot quickly.
Well, the thing is, Dwayne Wade. Well, Ric Flair still had some of his hair, and Shawn Michaels was kind of losing it there. So I guess it kind of makes sense. Norm, you got what you got in conference finals in the East?
Cleveland over.
Cleveland over shit. Okay, great.
Yeah, Cleveland over shit. Which is actually probably the best description of that series.
I mean, do you think that little Toronto and the Heat and the Hornets and all them?
Versus Cleveland, yes.
Okay. I mean, are they that much better is what it is?
Yes.
Okay. Even with Teron Lue head coach.
That'll be interesting. I'm curious to see how much of last year. I thought the coaching staff at Cleveland actually did a really good job giving their limitations. How much of that was Blatt versus the remaining staff?
I thought defensively what Cleveland did in the finals was still the best defensive job I've seen against the Golden State Warriors. The best.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, even the Memphis for about three games had a decent game plan, but I thought the best one was Cleveland, where they – we're just huddling up on Curry everywhere he went, you know, around the perimeter and just like putting a bunch of big guys and just daring them to attack. That's what I thought it was.
They did a fantastic job. It's a shame they fired that guy.
I think they did a decent job of like stringing out Curry and mixing it in with just switches with Tristan Thompson. And that's kind of like what, San Antonio started doing against them that one game they won. They won by, I think, double digits in San Antonio. So
this year,
yes.
I think it wasn't
double digits, but yeah, they won.
Are you talking about which team you're talking about now?
When San Antonio beat Golden State, they were playing kind of a similar style of defense as Cleveland did versus
where they huddled up on Curry.
Well, they mixed up either stringing him out, double teaming him off the pick and roll, or just switching.
I think that was a single digit win. Yeah,
was it 9 or 8?
Yeah, it was somewhere right around there. And Curry had a really bad shooting percentage night.
They did more switching than double teaming or stringing out the pick and roll. But
I'm gonna say this too. That's kind of the one thing you kind of have to always kind of keep in the back of your mind is that the Warriors kind of beat San Antonio good the last couple of games, but you know Popovich. It's very unlikely anybody would like hold a strategy back for games, you know, but he might be one of them. He might have actually, you know, I think it's within the realm of possibility, I guess.
No, I mean, Popovich, I think, is a phenomenal coach. He's amazing. But I think we may give a little too much credit to him in certain situations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, anytime he does anything, even if it doesn't work out, I think a lot of people give him a little too much rope, which is mm-hmm. why I kind of said I think Kerr is a better coach at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, and also he's a little more open than pretty much all the other elite coaches they have there. Where he, I mean, Billy Donovan's open too, but it's because he literally has no plays to draw up, you know, or whatever he draws up, the players don't pay attention. Whereas with Kerr, they want to run the plays he draws up. You know, even Luke, I mean, here's the thing about Luke Walton. I mean, what does that say about, you know, Luke Walton fills in, you know, Alvin Gentry had already left the staff because he went to the Pelicans and they round off all these wins without Steve Kerr. What does that say about the team?
They're good.
Well, it doesn't mean that they don't need coaching, that they kind of coach themselves.
No, I mean, I think coaching matters. It's just that they're a really good team and they kind of had set rotations and I believe Walton kind of just kept it going. And I mean, and it's not as if he wasn't, you know, Kerr wasn't a phone call away. So, I mean, I'm sure he was still taking part if he couldn't physically be on the bench.
Yeah.
Physically be at practice.
Yeah.
I mean, a couple of years ago, this team was coached by a guy that wanted to run through the post and not shoot as many threes.
With Jermaine O'Neal and who was the other guy? The other guy that they were trying to play a lot of. I'm totally blanking right now. One guy was Jared Jack. I remember one postseason they were giving like must have possessions to Jared Jack.
Yep.
Jared Jack. it just boggles my mind. That's Norman Ryan's favorite player, Jared Jack.
Hand down, man down.
Jared Jack. That one game. You know, he plays horrible all year, but he wins that one game for you.
And then he gets re-signed.
Yeah, and then
I love guys like Jared Jack. They will submarine your team for 19 games, but that one game out of 20, he'll put up like 27. And suddenly there's like pull-up mid-rangers and transition and other terrible shots will all go in. But you won't remember the 19 he likes. He subtly tanked, but that one game, that one sticks out in your memory.
So finals, you have a rematch here?
Yes.
And you have same result, Golden State in 6?
Cleveland.
Oh, hot yeah. Take.
Stop it.
Arena.
Yeah. Wait, you're saying Cleveland?
I'm going Cleveland.
You think Cleveland? Okay, where's my $5? Wait, hold on. Are we betting this?
I got to get odds.
Wait. No, we got to do this now. If it happens. You take Cleveland, I take Golden State.
If no one claims the $5. Oh, by the way, that $5 is got a time limit of, let's say, by the 21st of April, 2016. If no one claims it by then. It's on.
It's on. All right, Arena, you got that same thing, Golden State versus Cleveland?
Yeah, Golden State, 5.
5? So
5.
Game less.
Cleveland, 7.
Let me put it this way with LeBron. Is this, in the pantheon of the teams he's had, is this the best Cleveland team he's had? If they stay healthy. And then number 2, is it better than any of the teams he had in Miami?
Not better than the Miami teams.
The 2013 Miami team is like the Golden State Warriors are the best team. But geez, I mean, the Miami Heat in 2013 are like in the top 5, in my opinion. They are close. I mean, that was a great team.
I think the 12 team was better.
defensively they were better. Offensively, the 2013 team was better.
Yeah, I mean, that year was the year they went small.
They started to embrace the three. Chris Bosh started taking more threes.
I just think getting a more near prime Wade is just a complete terror. For the team that beat OKC.
Yeah, LeBron was still an MVP man. I mean, 2012-13 LeBron was amazing. But, I mean, how good is this Cleveland team, though, like compared to the other ones?
If healthy, they're pretty good.
Do you think they've underachieved all year?
I mean, I think they overachieved their Vegas win total for the season. It's just that the Warriors and Spurs just kind of like broke, kind of like rose expectation for what a good team should do.
Well, the Warriors especially. I mean, the Warriors broke what anybody could expect. Like, it's almost like the Warriors don't even exist. Like, they're on another plane. And then you have to judge everything else.
You say that, but the Spurs had like one of the top six or seven best records in NBA history. So yeah, it's not like
they had their best record ever as a franchise, ever.
Well, I think they were number seven overall in NBA history in terms of records, in terms of win percentage. So
you know what was one of those teams that got 67 wins? It was the Mavericks in 2007 when they lost to the Warriors in the first round when they had Baron Davis. That was one of those teams. We believe. And then the dunk on Kirilenko. All right, so we're finally going to be finishing up. How do you think you did on your second appearance on the podcast, Norman?
Terrible.
You think you did terrible?
Oh, I'm not going to lose $5 though.
Oh, it's okay. I think you did terrible too. Ryan, how you feel? You know, Adam Murray says the same exact thing when we're done with these shows.
Who's Adam Murray?
You see, Adam Murray might be on the show because that's pretty much what he says every time we like. I always ask Adam, like, Adam, what do you think of this game? He's like, eh. I'm like, okay, this is gonna be a great start to the topic. But no, that's gonna be finishing up this incredibly erratic and uncontrollable Western Conference. Was it a Western Conference playoff preview, or did we talk about anything? But on behalf of Norman Rockwell and Ryan Arena, this is Andrews. I gotta get out of here. Take care.